sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
The fiscal cliff fiasco continues. Japanese stocks are on fire. We're going to talk about a 2013 ready plan. And our guest today, Larry Williams, with all sorts of information, hopefully, on commodities trading. He's just a wizard with this, a longtime favorite of our listeners. All this and much more on episode number 294 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, happy holidays and hello to you. Sorry about last week. We had actually some major technical difficulties. The systems that we use to do our recordings in our studio, we had some glitches, and it was holiday anyway, and I figured, you know what, maybe we'll take a week off, and I apologize for not telling you about that and maybe making you a little bit unhappy about getting your weekly fix of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. It is the end of December 2012. Rolling right into the new year, 2013, and we have a lot of things that have changed and a lot of things that really haven't. Some things that we've seen over the last, I don't know, 3-4 months that are continuing to be the problem, the Achilles heel when it comes to markets, the news flow, the leaks, and all of the discussion about the fiscal cliff is frankly really annoying, because it continues to be the, whether it's the goal or the just the attitude of our leaders in Washington to wait to the last minute to fix anything. Seems like until it's an emergency, they just have no desire to come together or even separately to come up with a reasonable plan of action for anything, whether it's the fiscal cliff, as we're seeing here, whether it is the TARP, when we saw that back in 2008, whether it's the banking issues, whether it's high-speed trading. You know, it reminds me of in the airport when you go, and now you have to take off your shoes, you have to take the liquids out of your bag and all that. It's only after the fact that they found all this out, that they found somebody that was, you know, hiding something in their shoes or maybe doing something that would be, some kind of a threat in a liquid container, that they would actually start doing something about it. And it's an unfortunate situation that we have to live with, that unless it is down to the wire, nothing happens. And down to the wire means that the concern over things like the market is first and foremost in the minds of many of the people in Congress, and looking at, you know, what is it that we have to do to appease them? So what we find is all these news leaks that come out, little tidbits from this side, a little comment from that side, that is all about the idea of seeing how markets will react to it and then making decisions upon that. Now, here we are. It is now just days away from the end of the time where they had to make a decision. And what we're seeing is a weekend meeting that will come together to hopefully vote some kind of mini plan or stopgap band-aid into force, so that it will calm everybody down and that you won't have all this major economic wreckage due to the fact that we see all these tax breaks expiring on the eve of New Year 2013, or many of the benefits from unemployment and paying the doctors from Medicare and all these things that are automatically going to turn over and immediately just reverse back to where they were: higher tax on dividends, higher taxes for individuals, higher payroll taxes, and the list goes on and on. And what it looks like they're trying to do is come up with a plan that will at least be partially appealing, in that the higher end earners will still be taxed at a much higher rate. The people under that will be kept at their current rates, will extend some unemployment insurance and maybe do some tweaking to the AMT tax and a couple other things in there. But I got to tell you something. It's not only a little too late, it's a little too little overall. We need a major overhaul of the tax code as we see it now, possibly a return to where Glass-Steagall was, maybe even re-implementing the uptick, the uptick rule for short selling. All these things should have been addressed, should be addressed, and are not being addressed. And frankly, it's an abomination from the top to the bottom of every leader and politician that's out there, and they should be very ashamed of themselves. It is not creating an environment for economic growth, for stability in markets, and for consumers to feel they have any kind of confidence moving forward. In fact, last week, let's kind of get over to this because it's interesting. Last week, we saw the consumer confidence number come out, and it was absolutely horrible. We saw that the consumer confidence numbers that we had seen previously was somewhere in the neighborhood of about 74 or something like that. In the prior, it was revised down a little bit, but now we're at a 65 on the consumer confidence level that we saw. That's terrible. Now, that's on the heels of better-than-expected numbers in the housing area. But yet, at the same time, you have to realize something, that that takes a much longer time for completion, whether it's the sales, people have to look for a house, and they have to go get the mortgage, and you know all that comes into play. So that's a bit of a longer cycle and a bit of a lagging cycle. But when it comes to the consumer confidence, there's really a black cloud that is hovering right now over what's going on in consumers' minds. They just don't know what to do. The same thing holds for businesses. Now, we've talked about this at length and at nauseam, frankly. There's nothing that can happen with regard to that right now because the damage has been done already. But let's talk about what we have to expect for next week. And then I found a really interesting article on some of the things that would possibly be beneficial because of the fiscal cliff issues. But let's talk about a few things. Now, we have a big week coming up. It's a shortened week due to holidays again. There'll be no trading in the U.S. markets on Tuesday. And there'll probably be light trading for part of the day, but probably due to the end of the year, whether it's window dressing and reallocation, rebalancing, there'll be some excess volatility probably into Monday due to that and the fact that we're going to see something, whatever it may be, whether it's a vote or not a vote on the fiscal cliff and some kind of either stopgap measure or a total failure by them to come up with anything. So this is going to be a volatile day on Monday. I'll tell you that much right now. But what do we have? We have coming up this week, we have the employment numbers at the end of the week. You know, they look at what we've seen so far, and we're looking at possibly somewhere about a continuation, about a 7.7% unemployment rate, which is pretty good, actually, except for the fact that we know that the participation rate is down significantly. Before that, we're going to see the ISM manufacturing number, and that's coming out on Wednesday. And that number is important because it shows us the manufacturing process in the U.S., and that has been dipping down. In fact, last month it went under the key 50 level, which shows contraction. And analysts are expecting a little bit of a better number towards about 50.3. Now, again, I told you last month that I was hard-pressed to see how we're going to see any kind of better number because if you look at the individual components, the various regional manufacturing numbers, they've really come in pretty poor. They've really come in on the downstroke. Inventories have been up. Retailers haven't been selling as much. Orders aren't as high. And it would be really interesting to see if there's going to be any kind of an additional benefit from something in the manufacturing area this month. I don't see it. It was pretty, I think, shocking to a lot of economists to see that we dip below that 50 level, but that's the way it is. We're also going to see initial claims again, which have been doing pretty well, at least staying on or under the 350 level, considering and putting that into the perspective, of course, of what's good and what's bad. But I think the main issue is going to be we're going to see the end of the week, the ISM non-manufacturing component, which has been the service sector, which has been holding up very well in the U.S. And we're going to see, of course, the important unemployment numbers in terms of the rate, 7.7, like I mentioned, in terms of the estimates, and a payroll gain of about 150,000 jobs. I would say that I would be, again, hard-pressed to see how that, if you combine all the regional numbers as well as the fact of consumer confidence, how that is going to be, you know, very, any of those are really going to be very good numbers and surprisingly way to the upside. Now, I saw an interesting article in MarketWatch that was written at the end of last week. And I thought it was kind of interesting because it was the other side of the fiscal cliff. and how it can affect your wallet, and some things that could be actually beneficial, interestingly enough, in that, and because of the negative impact of what would happen if the fiscal cliff is not dealt with properly or dealt with in a way that isn't effective. Well, what could be beneficial to you? So there was a variety of things I thought was very interesting. The first thing would be cheaper gasoline. And that makes kind of sense if you think about it, because if in fact you see a higher amount of taxes, a lower take-home pay, consumers retrenching and all that, you would see that they would obviously stop spending money on a variety of things, maybe stop traveling a bit, maybe stop going to the stores as much, et cetera. So you would see that you would have a rise in inventories, and gasoline prices, because of the rise in oil inventories, would actually fall, which is kind of interesting. There is estimates that crude oil at about $90 a barrel could drop about $20 to $30 from where it is today. And maybe you would see that you would possibly have a significant reduction in gasoline prices, further than we've seen recently. The average gas price of regular unleaded right now is about $3.28. So that would be interesting. Now, because of some cost-cutting measures, you may also see longer airport waits. Now, that's not a good thing, because you're going to see cuts in the TSA staffing, and the lines at the checkpoints would be, you know, possibly quite longer. So, you know, what you would have to look at is a 20 or maybe 40 minute additional wait. And then you also have the flight delays, because the FAA is going to be cutting back, and they have to cut back on the control systems, updates, and staffing. And that would be interesting. They would also possibly mitigate the situation by operating fewer flights. So that was something I thought was kind of odd. You got pricing or groceries as one thing also. There's no farm bill that would be passed. And without one, the effect would be that they're going to recalibrate how milk is priced, which could more than double the price from its current $3.54 a gallon. And it could also reinstate planting quotas for other crops and limited disaster relief promises to farmers that were done, you know, because of the droughts. So that is also a negative situation, a very negative situation, obviously. Now, on the positive, kind of flipping back to that, you would have a bigger than what you've seen already discounts by retailers, because falling consumer confidence would possibly nudge retailers to offer more enticing sales and discounts to get the shoppers inside of the stores, right? And the worries about the fiscal cliff already have contributed to dismal holiday sales that we've seen. And it would continue to see a lot of purging of inventories, which have been on the rise lately, as we have talked about with the inventory and sales ratio. Now, you also have a negative on possibly the area of foods and drugs. And this is due to the previous budget cuts that the FDA inspectors are already trying to cover. They have more duties, less time per inspection. And this could limit the FDA's ability to effectively counteract emerging threats and things like food fraud, dilution, mislabeling, And there's just a whole slew of things that could be problematic. So I thought that was an interesting article that was over on MarketWatch and written by, Let's see, Kelly Grant. And those are just a few of the things that may or may not be affected. Because if we know already that we're not going to see a full, extension of everything that's been in force, what things might be cut, what expenditures might be delayed, and how does that affect not only consumers, but how does that affect some of these smaller points? You think about it, if they just maybe change the taxes, AMT, et cetera, but overlook the whole idea of the FDA or the FAA, well then, that all of a sudden you see milk prices going up and you see meat prices going up, et cetera, and then you see old farm good and grain prices going up. Interesting. What does that then do to further the consumer confidence and spending on other goods? Because those grains and foods, those are necessities. Those are necessities. And if we don't have the plan to do something about that, well, we're going to have some problems. Now on to another subject here. before we get to our guest today. One of the things that you've seen quite often is a rotation from best to worst and worst to best. Now, it doesn't always happen right away in any given year, right on the calendar year. It doesn't happen maybe sometimes for 2 years. But we did see it, for example, in the banking sector and also in the area of home builders. Now, if you look at some of the names of the companies that were the best performers in the S&P 500 in 2012, for example, PulteGroup up 176%, Whirlpool up 115%, Lennar 91%, Bank of America up 100%, Sherwin-Williams up 69%. You know, you go down this list, and what you find is a lot of financials, a lot of housing-related. And what's really fascinating about that, if you think about it, is that was pretty much the opposite of what we saw the prior 2 years. Now, on the negative side, the worst performing stock in the S&P 500 year to date as of today is the Apollo Group, the for-profit school company, down 62%. AMD, the chip maker, down 56%. Best Buy, down 49%. Hewlett-Packard, down 45%. JCPenney, down 44%. Cliffs Natural down 40%, then you go down the list and you kind of see Dell down 31% and Chesapeake Energy down 24%, Newmont Mining down 23%, Humana down 22%, International Game Technology down 20%, Staples down 18%. And again, there's a whole list. We're actually going to post that on the Disciplined Investor website this week as well for you to take a look at the whole list. But what my thought here is that it may be an interesting time to consider watching the worst and the best for a rotation. Now, is HP a stock that is doomed to absolutely failure and go down to zero? I don't think so. Yeah, sure, there's been a lot of investigation. There's been a lot of disclosure. You know, that is something that we've seen that is, creating a big drag on the stock. And if you listen to DH Unplugged, you know that early in the year, we actually recommended a short on it, and I think we closed it out about 55% up. But oftentimes what you find is that when things are at their worst, when there's panic on a stock, when it doesn't look like that it can get any better and it's only going to get worse, maybe time to consider starting to take a look at where is that support level? Where is that key level where buyers will start to come in? Now, on a daily chart, what you want to look at is where the basing starts to occur. Now, that basing may be a little bit sloppy, but where that basing starts to occur and find out moving back where what we like to do is price with significant volume, where that has been a historical level of support. Now, again, we're just focusing on HP for a second here. Now, with HP down so much, you would think that the management has to do some things significantly to turn things around in order to maintain their viability. Yeah, we're seeing that Windows 8 shipments have been really, much lower than expected, and it's hurting the PC industry. We know that. We know that the autonomy deal with HP has been just terrible. We know there's an investigation right now by the Justice Department on some of this. I mean, there's a lot of negative in the news right now, and that oftentimes shakes out just every last investor. But with HP down at these levels, is there any kind of technical level and some fundamentals, of course, but is there a technical level that looks like it could be an opportunity to buy some? An example of this would be Herbalife last week. We bought Herbalife for our clients at about $25 per share. We saw a very clear level of basing that was going on, but it was basically a falling knife if you look at it over the past 6 or 7 days prior. Well, it hit that 25 level, came down a little bit underneath it, and then bounced up, and we sold the last batch up at 29 in a matter of days. Not a bad return. Now, that's a short-term situation due to news-driven activity that was significant because hedge funds were kind of attacking it. But again, if you wait a few days sometimes and you find the basing out level and you put that with a price support level from sometime in the past that was significant, you can't just find, try to retrofit and fit in your own numbers, then what you find often is there is a buying opportunity. Now, whether or not that ends up being a long-term or a short-term buying opportunity, really is dependent on what is going on with the stock and a recovery play, et cetera. You know, one of the ones we saw this year as a great example of that was Yahoo. Yahoo was left pretty much for dead for a long time. And then Yahoo changed their management, changed some of the things they were doing, brought in new teams, let go of others, and really tried to transform the company into what their vision would be for a profitable enterprise to really take on the areas that Yahoo is meant to take on. Now, if HP can do that, it would be an interesting play, and this level that we're at right now is kind of close to a reasonable level of support. Now, it could drop down a bit to that, you know, test that $11.50 range, what we saw earlier in this year. But at the same time, the negativity of HP right now is so thick and so intense that, frankly, it bears looking at. Now, is this a approach that you'd want to use all the time? Absolutely not. What you want to find for most of the time is a stock that has high growth of earnings and revenues, good margins, increasing margins, and a whole host of other fundamentals, strong balance sheet, et cetera, that really can give you a long-term benefit. But there are those times where there's turnarounds, and we'll call these strategic positions that you want to possibly enter into in your portfolio. Smaller positions and build on them if they actually play out. But you know what? These are some of the things you want to look at. The rotation of what was bad to good and good to bad over the next several months, because oftentimes what you see is that there is a change in the dynamic because companies do realize that they have to do something to change, or the fact is that the investment is fully valued because it ran up so much and everybody was just kind of hopping on board. And naturally what's going to happen is people start to take profits and move out. Anyway, let's get to our guest, Larry Williams. How about it? And we have a great guest, and I mentioned it last week, Larry Williams, trader, author, and well-known and well-respected in the area of trading, is with us. I'm going to talk to him about a lot of stuff. Larry, I have a lot of questions, but first of all, how are you? It's been a while.
Oh, I'm doing great, thank you. You know, life goes on here in the beautiful Virgin Islands. There's no snow, so couldn't be happier.
What? You're in the Virgin Islands. Did I know that? Where are you?
In St. Croix in the U.S. Virgin Islands.
Nice.
America's last tax haven, a tax advantage program.
Yeah, well.
There's a lot of fund managers down here because our effective state and federal tax is 4% if you qualify. So a lot of traders in the Virgin Islands.
Yeah, it's not going to last long if this administration has anything to do with it.
Well, actually, it will here. I mean, we're in great shape. In fact, there's more people moving down here every day because of this really. It is the United States, and it's a great approved program.
Right, great. So a couple of things I want to talk to you about. There's a lot of things I want to talk to you about, but a couple of things in particular. You know, there's been, I know you do a lot of work with commodities, of course, right?
So, I do, yes.
And by the way, you and I were supposed to, how is your family? I know you and I were supposed to get together for a quick dinner when you were down here recently, and then something, is everything okay?
Oh, yeah, everything is great. I had a daughter, a granddaughter, unfortunately, at the age of 3, had type 1 diabetes, and so I went out to see her. She's on the West Coast, and we kind of get the family settled down, and my one son's a doctor, and so he was able to give him some good insight as well. He's a psychiatrist, but I think that helped as well.
Yeah, I hear
you.
Yeah,
all's well.
Good.
Thank you for asking.
Next time I'm there or you're here, we have to get together.
Yeah, I look forward to that.
Okay, so let's talk about some of these commodities for a minute. I actually did a podcast last night, and I did some review of how commodities have been doing. And I look back the last several months, and I'm like, I said, wow, you know, these really have come off something. I mean, some of them went up crazy, like corn, wheat, beans, but they've come down pretty significantly. So, you know, there was a whole concept of the supply-demand issue at first, and then traders got a little bit crazy. You saw that parabolic move in corn. And now we're seeing, like, you know, in the last several months, many of the commodities, and especially in the foodstuffs, down 20%, which is actually good because the food costs are down and that kind of goes through the system and all that. But what's going on in that whole area?
Well, let's talk about the grains. I think what we saw happen is this summer there was a potential for a drought. We were in Iowa during August and saw what was going on and started going short corn because obviously it wasn't as bad as it appeared. And these markets are over enthusiasm to under enthusiasm, and now we're getting into that under enthusiasm position. And once you see open interest really dry up in these grain markets, they're going to have one heck of a bull market in 2013. I mean, a great major move is coming in the grains, led by soybeans, probably soybean meal. So it's coming, a big move, and so this decline coming in here is just great. It's just preparatory to the big move that'll happen a little later in 2013.
So what do you do in these circumstances? I mean, do you go and look to start buying now? Are you kind of waiting till the time is right, and you know, then you'll work on it and start adding to it, or you're nipping at it now? Or how does your thinking and your strategy work?
Well, I think that to be a good trader, you need to be conditional. You need to have conditions. You have to have three or four of them kick in. So as you know, I look at the commitment to trader report to see when the large commercials start buying corn or pork bellies or whatever it is going to be. But I need more than that, too. That's just one indicator, because they can be early and they can be wrong. So then I like to look at seasonals and cycles and toss that in. Then look at open interest. That's really an important indicator. And then look at trend. But once you get the conditions there, I still want trend to say, yeah, the market really is, it isn't an uptrend now. So that's my approach. Find the conditions, zero in on the time zone with cycles and seasonals, and then put some trend mechanisms on top of the markets.
So in terms of trends, when you're trading, what are the time frames that you look at to find it? I'm sure you look at multiple time frames, but what is kind of that one time frame that you really want to look at to see how things are trending?
I look at daily bar charts more than anything. I hardly ever look at anything intraday. I think that's a waste of time unless mm-hmm. you're about 23 years old and on drugs or steroids. It's hard. It's really hard. and I look at weekly charts right. as well.
Well, weekly gives you the bigger picture, obviously.
And you can see where those conditions, the fundamental conditions and ratios and stuff show a little bit better there in weekly charts.
I think a lot of people, there's a lot of people that really don't use weekly charts. And I think that's a big mistake, generally speaking.
I would agree with you. I mean, you really pick up the long-term cycles. As you know, we got bearish in gold last year and said, you know, we've seen the high for some time here. It's in a four-year cycle. If you look on a daily chart or an intraday chart, you're never going to notice these long-term real trends of the market.
Yeah, and then what happens is the lower you go down, all the way down to minutes. And now, you know, some companies, as a matter of fact, TradeStation just did an update. And you can get second and 2 second charts, which I don't really. What is that about? What could you possibly use that for?
Everybody thinks the closer they are, but really, I think you have to stand away from the trees and see that there's a forest there. And
yeah.
There's no money in short-term trades because you're limited by time. At the end of the day, you got to be out. So how do you catch a big move? Impossible. You can't. Which means you can't bet small and win big. That's my whole strategy. That's how I manage funds. Most day traders, their losses will be equal to their gains. So they don't get a great risk-reward ratio in their basic bet before the game even begins. They're on the wrong side of the math.
But, you know, it's interesting because just let's say that you were, you know, you did have some kind of system where you would use a 5 second chart, let's just say, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You can't click the buttons fast enough. You'd obviously have to have some kind of crazy algo that's running or something going
right.
on.
Yeah, and I have some friends that do that, but you know, they've never made really big money, and they always have computer program problems. And they're subject to just one bad fill, you know, one little glitch in the program they didn't find out about, and then it happens. So it's a very, very strenuous game. And you know, why not go for low-hanging fruit, Andrew?
Yeah, I'm with you. I like the low-hanging fruit. Let's talk about this about gold. Aside from the trend for just a moment, The recent, I actually, about 2 weeks ago, started kind of hemming and hawing on this show and a few others and writing and tweeting and all my blogging, and we did it for our clients. We said, there's something wrong with gold. It's just not playing right all of a sudden. You know, it more than just a longer-term trend. I'm talking a little bit shorter. I'm talking days in days now. And we came up with, hey, you know what? If it falls off of this point, that really clearly looks like this. And anyway, all the different things that we use to come up with our targets.
Sure.
And lo and behold, gold falls off a cliff, okay? I mean, really, if you look at a daily chart, it looks ugly. But one of the things that I heard yesterday, which is, again, you know, who knows if this is the backstory, the true story, who knows, is that Paulson, you know, Paulson from Paulson Funds, his hedge fund, who had an abysmal couple of years, right?
Right, that, he just got bounced out today.
Yeah, he was fired yesterday or maybe last week, whenever it was, from private account management over at Morgan Stanley, I believe. And who knows who follows from there. And the interesting thing was, and the observation was that, hey, maybe there's a big seller that is being forced out of gold. And that's part of the problem with this, because one of the funny things is that gold may be reacting to the markets and maybe the conditions. But, you know, usually you'd see a little bit of a gold support when the dollar has been weaker and the euro moves higher and all that. But we're not seeing that at all. That relationship is shot.
Yeah, and bonds are firm in light of gold. They've been moving a little bit together. They're not right now. So it could be there's a big seller. You know, maybe Paulson had to get out of positions, or a big short could step into the market. It just seems to me like about the time I find that there's a definite relationship between one thing and another thing, then I find out that it isn't there anymore.
We're always looking for reasons, aren't we?
Yeah, we sure are.
You know, so. And things to blame, you know.
And you know, we find what we think is correlation or causation, really, but it's just correlation.
Right.
But the cool thing about gold, I mean, open interest got real high recently, so it pulls back. We're starting to see lower open interest in gold. And if that continues, as I believe that it will, then that's going to set up the buy point. And that's really such a great long-term indicator. You look, when we've had real low levels of open interest, we've had major rallies in gold. But my long-term view is gold is a strong four-year cycle. So new highs, rip-roaring bull market, gold. No, not now. It's over until sometime 2014.
Now, when you say open interest, for the listeners out there, can you explain what that is and maybe where they can find that?
Sure. Open interest, you find on the bottom of charts in the old days. It isn't used very much anymore. It is the net number of contracts that are open that have yet to be liquidated. And it's just exactly what it says it is open interest. It is interest in the market. When everybody's interested in the market, there's a lot of contracts open, so open interest is high. When nobody's interested, by and large, it's low, and you're at a market bottom. There's some other caveats, obviously, but on a grand oversimplification, that's what it's all about.
And that's the net long versus short, right?
Well, that's the number of contracts open. That's correct.
Right. Yeah. So when it comes to, you know, switching over for a moment and looking at the other commodities that are out there, you know, natural gas took a big hit, and, you know, it's very that's a crazy market on its own. That's a lot of people just want to stay away from that.
But, well, it reminds me when I traded pork bellies in the old days, or when we traded eggs and stuff like that. It's really not a market for the beginner, that's for sure.
So, Larry, let's kind of change gears for a second. Let's talk about your thoughts about next year in general. A lot of headwinds out there, a lot of things that have been happening that have been in the news. One of the surprise things, I think, back to the commodities for a second in FX, was the strength of the euro into the last end of the year. I mean, pretty substantial move in the euro considering all the things that are going on there, don't you think?
Yeah, that's been strong. I think the opposite side of that, what we should be looking for pretty soon, is a rally in the dollar index. I think it's getting ready in here. It's back and filled enough. It's retested those old lows we saw a couple months ago, which about what we saw in March. So I think we may have a rally there.
Okay. I can't hear you very well. Can you speak up a little bit for me, just a little bit?
I'd love to.
There you go. Great. Okay, so what about for next year? I mean, who knows what's going to happen? You know, we have crazy things that happen. We have typhoons, earthquakes. Mother Nature, of course, plays its part. But in terms of, I think, investor sentiment right now, isn't there this, do you feel this overwhelming amount of, complacency in that? And this doesn't have to be bad, that, you know, nobody's going to fail. You know, even Greece is going to come out of it. GM came out of it. I mean, so people are like, you know, why sell anything at this point?
Well, I don't know. I'm not much of a guy for looking at news. I really think long-term cycles make such an impact on the market. And not precise to the hour, of course, but generally speaking, I think markets follow cycles, and the news of the day accentuates the cyclical move. So with that as a backdrop, I think that we're probably going to see a substantial decline at the first of the year, and then a rally, another decline, and then a rally sometime starting in August of this coming year.
So is the thought of the decline in the beginning of the year, whether that's, you know, first month or around there, we're not saying day one, is that based on a cycle? Is it based on some fundamental factors, some technical factors? What are you looking at?
Well, a lot of things. One thing I'll just touch on briefly, because I know it's going to be so popular with a lot of market forecasters. We're talking about the second year, or when the president is reelected, what happens in his first term. And the second term in office profile is radically different than the first term in office profile of what usually happens. I mean, presidential politics really do influence stock prices. The other thing is a lot of presidents' second terms, they were assassinated, they died. Used to be presidents were came into office in March or August. So a lot of the data on that cycle that people will be talking about this coming is really bad data. But that notwithstanding, I think there are some really important long-term cycles, many years, that do influence prices. We know this last year we called the high and the low and the recent rally with stuff that I wrote a year ago. Pretty much spot on, and I hope that my forecast for 2013 will do the same, that generally speaking, cycles do dominate when we top and bottom in stock.
And last year, your forecast was for, just refresh me, that there would be a rally at the beginning of the year, and then a drop-off, obviously, into, I think it was the third quarter that you called, something like that?
Well, yeah, we come down hard after this rally we're in now is over. And that starts a pretty serious down leg. In terms of a very long-term perspective, the next bull market, I think, is quite a ways off, sometime the end of 2014. So between now and then, we have big declines and big rallies. But in terms of progress, breaking to new highs and free-running market like a horse let out of the barn, I don't think that's going to happen until late 2014.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because if you look at – we did a piece recently that – I think I sent it to you maybe talked about the earnings growth and revenue growth, and you're seeing companies like FedEx come out with earnings last week. And again, this is shorter term factors, but their revenue, their earnings were down 12% sequentially on a year-over-year basis from last quarter. And you're seeing companies come out with, you know, beating estimates that were lowered down significantly, but at the same time coming out with some very bold statements about their concerns about the future. You know, GE came out with a comment recently that there was a significant slowdown that they saw in the fourth quarter. But meanwhile, we're seeing kind of economic numbers not, you know, there's a variety of folk out there that have been saying, hey, we're in a recession now. And, you know, it's, but, you know, you don't really see that in the economic numbers, which is really fascinating.
Well, I think there are some economic factors that will influence the market this coming year. Probably the PIMCO report they just did recently on stock prices, which they think are down into, 2020, something like that. They think we're in a sideways market until then, based on an economic model projection. And I always like to look at yields and P.E. ratios as a measure of where prices might, how they might appreciate in the coming year. We're really not in a period. We don't see dividends real high. We don't see the yield on the Dow at 6% or anything like that. So I think it suggests that what you want to buy big breaks and sell big rallies, that trading strategy or investment approach where it really is going to be premier until sometime in the middle of this decade.
And that is all about the sideways, generally sideways market, you know, but that chop that we've seen. I mean, I think the historic.
Yeah, the interesting thing is, you know, we're having some pretty good strength in this year and rally in our stock market, but things led the way. Prices broke out to the upside in other markets of the world. Whether you look at Brazil, you look at the DAX, those markets got stronger, and then our market moved. And I think that's probably a good lesson for traders to say, well, let's take a look here at other markets around the world because America's been kind of a laggard here. So we want to watch it and watch other markets of the world to clue off of for the stock market here.
Yeah, I think that's very smart. Now, one of the things that I think that you also look at is, you know, you do a lot of thought-provoking discussions and writing and you look at the psychology of the markets. And one of the things that you told me off Mike a little while ago is that your son Jason wrote a book regarding psychology of markets, right?
Yeah, my son is really interesting. He's a psychiatrist trained at Johns Hopkins. And, of course, he watched me trade over the years. And at Johns Hopkins, he learned about a very interesting personality profile that they do there. They pioneered there. And it really shows you your personal strengths and weaknesses. So you can align yourself with what type of trading technology works for you and knowing your weaknesses as a trader, whether it's over-emotional or not emotional enough, whatever has been really valuable. So he did a book for McGraw-Hill called The Mental Edge in Trading.
The Mental Edge.
I'm really excited for him to see he still has some interest in my business. But he's starting to look a lot more at the markets and working with traders, counseling and consulting traders throughout the world now.
I guess that could be taken in two ways. So a son that wants to be involved with his father's business, is really excited and real proud of him and all that, and gets involved in the field. That's one way to look at it, right? The other way to look at it is if a son that sees a need to have a psychologist in the family to take care of his father's problems dealing with this business. You know what I mean?
Again, it's so erratic. I can't hear anything.
Okay, well, Larry, I can hear you fine on this end, by the way. I was saying...
Now you're real clear.
I don't know what's happening. It's kind of weird. I was saying that your son is either trying to follow in your footsteps or solve your problems related to the field, being in psychology.
again, I hear...
I hear you. All right, Larry Williams, thank you for joining us. I appreciate it. We'll put
the... Good being with you, Andrew, as always.
Thanks
Happy
so much.
Happy New Year and Merry Christmas.
Okay,
to you.
You too. Bye-bye. Now, let me recommend that you do check out Larry's books, and you can go to ireallytrade.com to see all the things that he is talking about and that he talks about and that he has for you to see, because he has some great books that really will teach you some of the real good basic trading and ways to actually think about trading and commodities, etc. Now, let me talk about commodities for 1 second and futures, because with the whole fiscal cliff fiasco going on, there's going to be a lot of volatility out there. And one of the things you want to watch right now is a couple of things. You want to watch gold, which we have talked about being short. Hopefully you took our advice on that. And that was at about 1724. And gold is currently trading in the 1560 range and 1650 range. And I think that was a call that you really should have paid attention to. We saw a lot of really good action on the charts from the aspect of what we do over at Trigger Point Research. And at the same time, you want to look at these levels right here, a little bit lower on gold as a potential add-on area or to get into the long position, because it looks like it's starting to base out here. But more importantly, I think when you look at the S&P futures right now, this 1386 level approximately is a key level. And if we break there, you go down to 1363 as far as we can tell from all the research we've done. 1386 is a weekly strong point. It also has some support on the daily. But at the same time, again, with all that's gone on with this whole fiscal cliff, anything can really happen right now. And into the end of the year, you want to think that a lot of traders are going to try to see if they can grab any of this if it does fall down there. And again, 1363, 65 on the S&P futures, which is the March contract right now, as well as the 1386 level is important. So look at those. I do believe that you will see some extreme volatility here, but playing the technical size of it, very important. And to that note, if you want to learn more about commodities and futures, go over to TriggerPointResearch.com. In addition to that, on the Disciplined Investor, every day we have a video now that will give you some insight into all these little things we're talking about when we talk about the key support levels and resistance and where there's going to be that volume level of interest and inflection points. And that's done by our partner at Trigger Point Research, that's TAS Professional. And you will see every single day about 9 or 10 o'clock every morning, there'll be a new video that will be available for you to check out. And if you want to really learn about commodities, there's a video series that you can actually subscribe to where there's a link there for that. But one of the things that I think is interesting to note is that since we started the commodity alerts at Trigger Point Research, that was about a month and a half ago. If you run this like a portfolio using the kind of process that we talk about, and we give you all the details on that, it's up about 10% over that period. And since March, the Trigger Point Research stock portfolio is up about 8%. And with very limited drawdown. So if you're looking for a way to manage and get alerts to trade, this is trading now. If you've been interested in it, what a great time to get involved in it in the beginning of the year. I mean, make a resolution that you're going to make money here and you're going to do it in a disciplined and orderly manner. And if you're looking to do it on a trading and get trading ideas, well, Trigger Point Research has that available for you. So you should head on over there and check it all out. Check out the 14-day free trials on the commodity alerts. One of the things I want to tell you right now, and I want you to listen to this very carefully.
people like to pick and choose. They want to say, oh, I don't like that stock. I don't like that commodity. I never traded corn. You got to play the game as it's played out. Don't come in with preconceived notions on anything in investing, because that isn't the point of investing. You want to come in and you want to say, hey, I want to make money and limit my downside. And by doing so, that leaves the world of opportunities available for you without a preconceived notion that, oh, I don't like that stock. I don't like to invest this way. I don't like to invest that way. And if you are, in fact, listening to this to talk about and thinking about making money, you know, why not take it as a 2013 resolution and action plan to kind of forget all the preconceived ideas that you have on any particular stock or investment idea and start thinking about making money as your goal. That's it. Just making money as your goal. It's not always easy. You'll fail here and there, no question. But the fact is that that is the very nature and essence of investing. It's about making money. Not feeling good about the stock you have, the name that's in there. It's all about making money. How many people would never short Apple ever, always hold on to it? Meanwhile, it's down how much, right? From sevens into the fives? I mean, it's a 200-point swing on Apple. Maybe you were really excited about the opportunity for JCPenney, so you bought it when it was low and kind of went up a bit and you kind of held on to it. Well, maybe you should have sold it when it hit key levels that were clearly going to be resistance, and we see a lot of people coming in short on this stock. Well, we know they're going to be hitting this hard. And understand that the process of investing is many different components. It's buying and holding some stocks that have good, solid overall fundamentals and good technicals. And it's also the side of trading. And it's also the side of using alternative assets in your portfolio to make sure that you have a good diversification and diversification in trading style. So anyway, that I think that's a good New Year's resolution, and also maybe time for you to think about, you know, heading on over to Trigger Point Research to check that out. Also, I do want to mention that if you've been reluctant for whatever reason and, you know, you're just wondering what to do and how you should be in the market or out of the market, you know, we also manage money for you in two different strategies, the global allocation strategies, which are more of a traditional style strategy utilizing ETFs, institutional-only mutual funds, low cost, and we scrub the universe of possible investments for that to be what we think is the best. And at the same time, we allocate the portfolio according to global macroeconomic as well as trends. And then you also have the TDI managed growth strategy, which we've heard about, which is $50,000 minimum. And what we do is allow you access to see what's going on, a private client blog that tells you about what we're doing and gives you a sort of not only a look into it so you could train yourself on why we're doing certain things, but also manage the portfolio for you directly with an account in your own name. You don't have to worry about any of that. That's something that really for 2013 you should really consider as well. And finally, I mean, I just want to talk about the idea of resolutions when it comes to investing. You know, one of the things you really should do is write things down. Make a resolution that you're going to write down the levels that you're going to buy, you're going to sell. Keep an alert list, a watch list. Make sure that the levels that you say, well, you know, I'm going to buy the stock at 20. And if it goes down to 17, I'm going to sell it. But then it goes down to 17, like, well, maybe I'll buy some more. And really, and then it goes down to 16, you're like, well, I can't get rid of it now because I can't take a loss. Stick to your plan. Stick to your discipline. Make that your number one resolution for 2013. Well, I want to wish you a very happy and a healthy new year. All the best to you and a very prosperous 2013 to come. I'm going to be here for you. We have some great guests. Anything you need, any questions you have, simply email me at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And make sure to use all the things that we have at your disposal to make sure that you have the most profitable year you can have. And that's what we're going to try to do for 2013. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you real soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented it should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.